Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. This is Pat Iyer, and today we're going to be talking about conflict management. I have with me Randy Kern, who has an interesting background. He is a training and professional and leadership expert. He specializes in conflict management. Certainly a subject that we as nurses know about from many different perspectives. Randy has over 20 years of experience in fire services, serving as a chief officer. He's an instructor, and he's also a nurse. An interesting combination that I don't see very often. And he's a community educator, as well as the president of a company called Fully Involved Consulting. Randy specializes in producing results with leaders, teams, and organizations through customized training programs. Welcome to the show, Randy.
Thanks for having me.
Randy and I first met at the National Speakers Association. It was a few years ago, Randy, that we had a meeting of people involved in healthcare speaking. And I remember you were sitting at one end of the table, and I was sitting, you were to my right, and I was thinking as we went around introducing ourselves that the combination of being a firefighter and a nurse and a speaker was probably the only person that I've ever met with that background. So what came first? Were you a firefighter before you became a nurse, or the other way around?
I actually got into the fire service right out of high school. I was 18 years old. Just was fascinated with it, and it was a great choice, so it became my primary career for, actually, I said 20 years, it's actually over 30 years now. Mm. So with that, I became an EMT as part of the requirement and led into paramedic and started working in the hospitals. And again, shortly after becoming a firefighter, I started working in the hospital emergency rooms as a technician, and use my EMT, eventually paramedic, and then that just led me to become a nurse in the hospital for, 20 years.
Mm. And then when you were a nurse, were you also handling fires at the same time? I mean, assuming not in the hospital, but at the same time, meaning outside the hospital.
Correct. The benefit of being a firefighter is we work long shifts, 24-hour shifts, but then we have 2 days off, so many of us have second careers. My early years, I really targeted on the medical aspect and worked mostly emergency room as a nurse and did some pediatric, cardiac, some intensive care, but I was a part-time or pool nurse throughout those years.
Mm-hmm. And then somewhere along the way, you got interested in conflict management. What provoked that interest?
I knew I wanted to be a supervisor, a leader. In the fire service, the first rank is called lieutenant. So I prepared over several years of getting educated and really, being ready to take on the role as a supervisor. I was in my mid-20s, and I felt very confident that I knew the job, technically, and I got promoted. I started my journey very well for about a month, and then really faced a very difficult conflict with a crew member, and I did not handle it well, and their belief in me really went to nothing. Within a couple of weeks, I was in the chief's office defending why I should be an officer. And it crushed me, and I was given an opportunity to make it right, and I had to find a way, and I had to learn how to deal with conflict. And I, up to that point, I've never been taught how to deal with conflict, and that kind of led me down the journey I am now, figuring out a way, and it's difficult, especially when you don't know what to do. I stood there looking at the firefighter that challenged me and just said nothing. I wanted to find a way. I had to find a way, and over the years, I've perfected it and help other people now.
I had a similar experience at about the same age when I was in my mid-20s that occurred in a school of nursing, and an incident that involved a student and a head nurse and a supervisor, and I remember mishandling it as well, although at the time I thought I was doing a great job and doing the right thing in the steps that I took ended up causing some consequences, and it made me very attuned, as for you, in terms of there's a right way and a wrong way to handle a situation, and when you do it the wrong way, there can be some real lasting consequences as a result of it.
Yeah, and I think something important to point out, if you move into any kind of leadership role, I know we have different people, I'm sure, listening to the program, but if you move into any kind of leadership role, that challenge is going to happen. It's part of team dynamics. We form a team, but then we storm. And I wish I would have known that ahead of time, just to kind of be ready for it, because it was like being hit by a vehicle. I was like, I was not ready for it. I did not expect it. And I think it made it more challenging. So if you're moving into any kind of leadership role, expect it to happen and kind of be prepared the best you can.
You just mentioned a term that some of the people in our audience may not be familiar with, the stages of forming and dissolving a team. Could you go through those?
Yeah, there's four stages of team dynamics or team development. The first one is forming. You know, you get together, and I call it the honeymoon period. Everybody's nice to each other. And then the second phase is storming. People are trying to figure out how they fit in. What's my roles and responsibilities? What's the pecking order? How do I belong to this team? So they start to challenge things. And often they'll challenge the leader. Once you get through that whole storming phase, you go into a norming phase. And it's everybody knows their job, and they do their work, and people, for the most part, get along. And then the last one is performing. People go beyond doing what they need to do. They actually help others succeed. And that's when the strengths of a team will really rise up and the dynamics of the team will be the best. Most people never reach a high-performing team. It's a very small percentage. The interesting dynamic is every time you get a new person on a team, you actually go back to the beginning. The other interesting dynamic, some people, once they get out of that forming stage, they get stuck in that storming phase. They just never get out of it. So there's different approaches you can take at each stage that can help expedite you getting to a higher level from stage one in the forming, really define the expectations, the roles and responsibilities. It's a great opportunity, really great opportunity for people as a leader to interact with folks and ask, how are we going to treat each other? What is our norms? One of the companies I work with, we do team contracts. So they agree ahead of time how to behave. And it's really powerful because you have a vested interest. It's a honeymoon period, so people are working with you. But once they commit, then they will follow through most of the time. So there's different things you can do in each stage to get yourself moving to the higher level and be more effective.
And I'm thinking of the applicability of this to working on a nursing unit where there's a lot of turnover, or people from agencies coming in who are affecting the team dynamics. That could have an impact on patient safety and communication within that nursing unit.
Yeah, absolutely. And something about safety, NASA actually a couple years ago was doing a research study. I happened to be involved in it from a training perspective. I was not doing the training. I was actually a participant to evaluate the training as part of a research. The reason they were studying firefighters at the time is because, like astronauts, if you're in conflict, it could have serious, even fatal results. And I think the same concept would apply to nurses. if nurses are not getting along with one each other, could patients suffer? And I absolutely would say yes. And I feel like I even, as a new nurse, I felt I was even subjected to that. Unfortunately, nursing, we're tough on each other. And as a new nurse, I still remember kind of being treated and outcasted differently and getting difficult patient loads. And I do think there was jeopardy of patient safety because of that. And it goes back to the forming stage, just like you mentioned. So it's absolutely how you manage that can affect patient safety.
Conflict management and conflict resolution can be a subject we could discuss from many different perspectives, and I would love to have time to explore all the nuances with you, because immediately I think about conflict between doctors and nurses. I think about conflict between nurses and nurses, between nurses and patients, and between, in my audience, legal nurse consultants and attorneys. Some of our audience work in law firms with attorneys. Some of them are independent business people who have clients. But a commonality is, in all of this, is that there is a verbally combative person who is upset about something and complaining. So if we take that universe and kind of bring it down to, there's an attorney complaining to a legal nurse consultant about something that happened in the case. Could you take us through a model of how to handle that situation?
Sure. My first thought is you've got to look at the intensity of the emotions involved. If the person is at a level that's not going to be constructive and they're no longer attacking the problem, they're attacking the person, it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to actually make any headway. So, you know, cooler heads will prevail. So you have to develop or delay a response or create a delayed response in that manner. Again, this is when someone their hot button's been pushed. They are not thinking clearly. They're just reacting. Very primitive amygdala response that, I'm going to survive. So you have to judge the intensity of the conflict. Now, hopefully, most conflict is not to that level. The first thing I think of is being present, and I say curious. Now, present, there's so much missed communications because we're not present. We're easily distracted. And the reason I say curious is curious kind of sets us up on how to think and be open-minded. The reality is, most of these relationships are ongoing, and the previous conflict, the previous interactions have already predicted the next outcome. So the conflict hasn't happened yet, but I can tell you how it's going to end. Somebody has to change, or you're going to keep getting the same outcome. Now, we can ask the other person to change, but that's just going to probably piss them off. So what can we do? Can we change to have an impact on the outcome? The answer is absolutely yes. You know, if you think about showing up and seeing a friend you like, your energy's high, it's great, it's really purposeful. And the other person responds that way. When we see someone we really don't care for, and our energy shows up that way, they see it, they feel it. So especially these are ongoing relationships, how you show up is gonna affect how they respond. There's some neuroscience behind it, the mirror neurons and stuff, how people behave are often given back to you. But one of the exercises I love to do is talk about the specific incident. So think of a time when an attorney was yelling at you about the situation. And I ask people to sit and write, how is that person showing up for you? And they write it out. But then the second thing I have them do is, I want you to do the same thing from their eyes. How do they see you? And it gives you an interesting dynamic, because it's like a dance, right? It takes two people. And often, because they're being so negative to us, we're being negative back to them, and it's just self-perpetuating. So the communications is either making it better or worse. You're either elevating the relationship or you're tearing it down. So how can we change our approach to elevate the conversation? And so that really goes back to the basic skill of being present and curious. Hear them out. The worst thing you can do is stop people from talking, I believe. And some people that are very dominant, especially the dynamic that's interesting on this is the power issue. Because in conflict, there's two significant areas, right? The goal of what the purpose is, and then it's the person. So as long as we stay goal-focused, it's great. But when there's a power struggle, then it becomes about the person again and gets away from the purpose of what you're doing, which is the goal of the conflict. So let me pause and make sure I'm still on track and hear your thoughts, Pat.
Sure. When you talk about how is that person showing up for you, what does that mean? Just in case people are not familiar with that term.
I think it's what you see, it's what you feel, right? And the purpose of that activity I do with folks is to have them reflect on how they are affecting the conflict, right? It takes two people. So it's easy to say, oh, the person's a jerk, they're talking loudly, they're being rude and everything else. But now you suddenly put yourself in the attorney's eyes looking at you. How are you behaving? Whatever your behavior is, it's adding to the conflict, either in a good way or a bad way. And I think by reflecting on how you show up, listen, you might just be acting helpless. And because, especially if there's a power issue here, which I think there might be, you might have learned helplessness of just taking it. And it's actually making the conflict what it is. So with that perspective, you can have better insight of what could I do differently that would make the conflict better. And again, if it's about the people and not about the purpose or the goal, you're not going to get anywhere. But often we get into conflict, we want to be right. And, you know, we actually, one of the phrases I've heard before I love is we'd rather be right than happy. So it becomes about being right over the other person, not about the purpose or the goal of what you're trying to solve. So did that help, Pat?
Yes, it reminds me of the phrase that people would rather hear you are right than I love you.
Wow, that's powerful. Sad, but powerful.
Yes. So, you know, the next time you're having an argument with your spouse, remember those powerful words that she would rather hear. Oh, Randy, you are right.
Love it.
So you've taken us through the first stages of listening and trying to understand what is going on with the attorney. Why is the attorney so upset? And listening, and I would stress not interrupting, because I found early on when I got those angry phone calls from attorneys that if I interrupt before the attorney had a chance to say his thing or get his words out, that he would just get angrier.
Yeah. I want to add to that, because the other thing that happens when we really are present and curious, you know, we're often in I call it a narrative mind. So your mind's constantly racing and other thoughts are coming in your head, and I'm like, oh, I got this, you know, another phone call to make, I got, you know, dry cleaning to pick up. You got that narrative mind going all the time. When you could be present and curious, you actually are there for the experience. And the benefit of that is, one, it actually reduces your judgments. Okay? We have a lot of history and filters, and by being present in the moment, you actually have a better job of really assessing what's going on. The second thing it really does is it allows you to really hear what they're saying. You know, a lot of people are listening, but they don't really, you know, I guess you could say it the other way around. A lot of people are hearing, but they're not really listening to what the person's saying. Hear them. Because what they're telling you they're upset about is probably on the surface, there's probably a deeper meaning. And when you start really, really listening to what people are saying, then you can pick up cues, not only in their words, but in the tension of the voice, the volume, the pauses. So really listening allows you to hear so much more than the words being said. And the advantage of that is it could help you really identify what the conflict is. They could be calling you about one thing, and really the conflict is completely different. So after you hear them out and really listen to them, you check in. You know, it sounds like you're troubled by XYZ, whatever it is. It gives you an opportunity to really pinpoint what the issue is. It lets them know you're listening to them, but it also gets you to clarity. What is the real issue here? Because if you try to fix the non-issue, you're never going to get it resolved. Make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think that in the case of plaintiff attorneys contacting legal nurse consultants that they've hired to work on a case, as an example, that the real issue when they're complaining about billing is that the bill is higher than they expected, and the attorney is going to have to go back to the client and give an explanation as to why the initial review took 15 hours instead of perhaps an unrealistic estimate of 7 or 8. Was it because the medical records were poorly copied or illegible or completely scrambled, or there were complexities in the case that the attorney was unaware of? So while the attorney's concerned about the bill, there's often an ego and a client representation issue that is in the background. The attorney's pride and stature with the client is affected by a bill being higher than the attorney expected. So that might be an example of what you mean of what's behind the scenes in terms of that reaction.
Yeah, that's a great example. And again, you know the world better than I do, but they're often what they're complaining about is not the real issue. It's sometimes it's completely different than what they're complaining about. And when you listen and you define and you start having a conversation with them, you'll get the clarity. And then you can actually listen. They may still be upset about this time, but here's the other thing is these are ongoing relationships. My guess is these are relationships you have to maintain for your business, because I'll be honest, if someone called and treated me that way, I probably would not work with them. Now, can I always say no? No. It's, you know, that's unrealistic. So you have to want to invest the time in developing that, figuring out the problems, and also invest in that relationship if you're going to have it ongoing. You got to shift from a short-term thinking to a long-term thinking if you want to maintain a relationship and have it, you know, not keep tearing at you, because conflict releases a lot of stress hormones, and it's not pleasant. That's why most people avoid it. You need to maintain a relationship, work on it, figure out the problems, and try to start working on solutions. You know, they're educated people. They have the same issues when they're on billing, I'm sure. And when you can have good conversations about what the problem is and then how to prevent it in the future and define expectations, or, you know, if I start getting into this transcript or whatever you're looking at and it's going to be more complicated than I thought, we have a dialogue going ahead of time. So I'm sure this, again, I know I might be creating wrong answers here, but I'm making a point that you work on moving forward from this conflict, because the next conflict is going to look exactly like this one unless you intervene.
Yeah, and that's a real critical point. When a person agrees to be an expert witness to testify in a nursing malpractice case, there is a commitment of anywhere between 3 to 5 years to work on that case with the attorney until it gets resolved. Wow. If the nurse is consulting behind the scenes, then there's a little bit more flexibility in terms of being able to walk away from a conflict. But if a nurse is working in a law firm with a group of attorneys, it's not so easy to get up, lock the door, and walk away. So there, you're right, there's a lot at stake in terms of knowing how to be skillful in handling the conflict.
Yes, I totally agree.
Have you taken us through all of the steps? I've heard the beginning ones. I think there's some more that you want to discuss.
Yeah, when I first started out, I had that conflict. Actually, the way I developed my model, I developed the model and wrote a book on it. I actually was working as a nurse at a hospital, and a good friend of mine happened to be the director of nursing, and I called her up and I said, can I meet with you? And because, again, this was that time I had to figure out a way. And I met with her, and I had index cards with conflicts written on them, and I asked her to meet with me and help me, coach me on how to manage conflict. And I handed her the index cards, and she's flipping through them, and she's laughing. You know, I dealt with this morning. We had to let somebody go last week for this. And she just went through them. She does it every day, so it was easy for her. And we did a role play, and I did horrible, didn't know what to do. She said, let's flip it around, and let's do an actual incident that happened this morning. And we role played it, and it gave me a basis of what to do. So from that, I created, it's expanded over the years, but I created my core method. For the fire service, I call it CrossFire, and CROSS is an acronym. I'm currently writing a book for healthcare. I'm calling it Prescription for Healthcare, and I'm calling it CLEAR. Mm. So it's a clear prescription for healthcare conflict. So CLEAR, the first thing is identify conflict. We did mention that already. You really want to get down to the true issue. What is the conflict or concern? And you do that by... Let me cause a little pause here. This model actually was originally designed for managers and leaders. So you have the actual or perceived authority or power over someone else. So it makes it easier for you to lead in this sequence. But it also could be used in the same manner. You're just walking the other person through the steps. I hope that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the first thing is identify the conflict. You know, what is the real issue? Hear them out and figure out what the real conflict is. The second step in CLEAR is listen. And that helps you define the problem, get to the real issue. It also lets you verify by paraphrasing back what you're hearing. And once you establish the conflict and you've listened to really pull it out, the third step is define the expectations. What's the goal of this conflict? What are we trying to accomplish? And the more the two groups are in line with the expectation or goal, the better, not surprisingly, the better chance you're going to have in success if you can agree on what you're trying to solve. The fourth step in the acronym is ASK. So it used to be action plan, but I really found out that most people want to tell people how to fix this. Mm-hmm. I think it's our human nature. But when I got certified as a coach, I realized how little impact I had at telling people what to do. And I found the power of asking. So after you define the expectations, you ask, what are some things we can do to move forward? So when you go back to that lawyer and we talk about he's upset about the bill and, you know, I'm sorry this happened, what can we do moving forward so this doesn't, you know, obviously you don't want this to happen again. The expectation is you understand what the bill is going to be. But we are going to have problems with difficulty sometimes with the bill not being that because of different reasons. How do we move forward? Ask them on a solution. So even though you might have the solution, keep quiet. Ask them because they're much more receptive to the plan if they're engaged in the plan. And to me, the most powerful things you can do in managing conflict is listen, and the second thing is to engage the other person and define the solution. So creating solutions. So that's the A in CLEAR. And this is a little weird, but it's really powerful, especially in a leadership role. The R is actually repercussions. It was kind of evolved out of accident in a leadership role, but when people got in trouble and they got in trouble again, they were shocked at what was going to happen next. And I said, you know what? I don't want anybody to be surprised what's going to happen next. So I started telling them, listen, we have a plan. I believe in you. But if you don't live up to that plan, here's what's going to happen. And it's the repercussions. Now I know from science all behaviors are driven by consequences. So when I started telling people what would happen next, the repercussions, they stopped doing the bad behavior. So that's why I thought it was critical to include this. I call it my special sauce in my model, is repercussions. What's the consequences? What's going to happen if we don't live up to this plan? And again, you could probably help me, Pat, as far as what those repercussions would be if the attorney bill wasn't the same next time. Or actually, I take that back. If the action plan they set in place wasn't followed through, what could happen? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And there are some repercussions for the legal nurse consultant, and there's also some repercussions for the attorney. If the attorney doesn't pay an expert's bill and it is perfectly legitimate and it's not off the wall, the expert has an option to withdraw from a case. It's an extreme behavior, and it has to be done very carefully and under certain circumstances. But if an attorney is caught without an expert on a case and it's too late to name another person, then the attorney's case is jeopardized. So the nurse has some power, and the attorney has power, and that's why attorneys in general, in my experience, tend to tread a little bit more lightly with expert witness bills than they do with consultant bills, because the expert's got more power.
Yeah. Yeah, I started this whole conversation talking about the relationship with power. It's the only thing that comes to mind is powerful. But it's an interesting dynamic. So can I just go over the acronym one more time so make sure everybody has it?
Yes, please do.
So, again, it's clear. C is the conflict. L is listen. E is the expectation. The A is the ask, and you're going to develop an action plan. And then the R is the repercussions. The last thing is not a step, but it's something you need to do, is document this. You know, I always say, I don't care if you pull out a napkin and write out your notes. People are going to take it more serious. Our memories are fallible. It's really important to document it. People will take it much more serious. And that what you're going to document is clear. You know, what was our conflict? What was said? What is our expectations? What is the we asked? What's the action plan we're going to do? And what's the repercussions if that action plan is not lived up to? So documentation is really critical too, I believe. And again, making sure we agree to what's being said, and it just takes it up a notch. It makes it more serious.
And that's very useful, in particular when months go by and then there's a question about what actually was agreed to, what transpired. The individual who's got the documentation is far better off than the individual with a somewhat hazy memory of
yes.
what was supposed to happen.
And with technology now, that might be a simple email. You know, this is just wanted to follow up on what we agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, you know, and go through the key elements.
Well, Randy is the author of a book, Crossfire, Taking the Heat Out of Conflict, a Conflict Resolution Guide for Fire Officers, that's available on Amazon. And Randy, I can't wait to see your book for healthcare providers. I think that's going to be very useful for our audience because of the commonality of being involved in nursing and the potential for conflict within a healthcare environment.
Great. Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to it, too. It's a lot of work.
It is absolutely whenever you write something. How can people get to know more about you, Randy?
Well, I want to be available if anybody has any specific questions. They could actually just email me directly at randykern, K-E-I-R-N, @gmail.com. They can email me directly if they have any questions or I can help them out. My website is of the same name, randykern.com, and also you can find me on LinkedIn with Randy Kern.
Terrific. Well, thank you, Randy, so much for spending time with us and being part of the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for asking.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.